With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Researchers seek standards to test smoke taint in wine grapes. As climate change and wildfires challenge California's wine sector, smoke taint has emerged as one of the primary threats to the state's most lucrative crop. Despite a growing body of research on smoke taint, scientists and growers say the gaps in the still-evolving science mean wildfire smoke continue to cause unnecessary crop losses and financial damage even when it doesn't taint grapes. In 2020, up to 325,000 tons of wine grapes worth hundreds of millions of dollars went unharvested in California due to actual or potential smoke damage. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report. And now let's get into today's show headlines. California starts the new water year with the possibility of a repeat wet season. The California Department of Water Resources and other water experts discussed many of the several ways the state is preparing for the possibility of yet another extremely wet water season. With the start of the water year officially on October 1st, the state is now incorporating some of the lessons learned from last year, as strong El Niño conditions have been forecasted for the state yet again. The DWR and the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, which operates the State Water Project and the Central Valley Project respectively, are closely coordinating to ensure the state's reservoirs have flood space available, as well as to store as much water as possible in case of a return to drought conditions. Those experts said that the storms provided a huge boost to the major reservoirs. The SWP was able to capture a total of 3.5 million acre-feet of water since December 1st of 2022. Those agencies are also working to prepare local communities for another year of flooding. They've provided flood flight training and pre-season emergency response coordination. They've secured more than 2.4 million sandbags at pre-positioned locations. So far, the governor has set aside more than $430 million in the most recent budget to support flood response. Stay tuned to AgNet West and this radio station as we continue to cover California's water season. But for right now, here's AgNet West Brian German with back-to-back agriculture reports.
Some of the potato varieties evaluated in the observational trial in Kern County are showing some positive results. Kern County Vegetable Crops Advisor Jaspreet Sidhu highlighted some of the standout varieties from the trial, which might move up to the Kern County replicated trial next year.
In the observation trial, we had 70 varieties, and out of those 70, there were a few that performed really well, like the Acoustics, the Primavel, and Primavel is already adopted by some growers in our area based on our results from last several years. And then there were some baby potatoes, as you know, like there is a more interest in the baby potatoes or the bite-sized tubers now. So there were a few bite-sized tubers that performed moderate in terms of yield, but the quality was really good. And then we had some specialty fingerlings from Colorado State that also performed good, as we have interest in those fingerling potatoes.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture is currently accepting grant applications for its Proactive Integrated Pest Management Solutions Program. Administered by CDFA's Office of Pesticide Consultation and Analysis, the Proactive IPM Solutions Program will have a total of $325,000 available in the current grant cycle. The program aims to predict the potential arrival and spread of exotic pests in the state. It also focuses on developing and testing low-impact management strategies, especially biological solutions, that can be swiftly put into action if these pests become established. The ultimate goal is to reduce the long-term use of broad-spectrum pesticides, aligning with the Sustainable Pest Management Roadmap. Applications for the program are due by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, October 11th. More information on the program and how to apply is available at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
What GMO crops are grown and sold in the U.S.? Well, there's corn, like me, soybeans, canola, sugar beets, and cotton. Typically, we're ingredients in certain foods. GMO alfalfa, corn, soybeans, canola, and cotton are used as animal food. And while you won't find many GMOs in the produce section, there are versions of GMO apple, summer squash, potato, and papaya in a few markets. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, another delay for the Farm Bill as the House must now spend time electing another speaker after the ousting of Representative Kevin McCarthy of Bakersfield.
Doing the right thing isn't always easy, but it is necessary. I don't regret standing up for choosing governance over grievance. It is my responsibility. It is my job. I do not regret negotiating. Our government is designed to find compromise. I don't regret my efforts to build coalitions and find solutions. I was raised to solve problems, not create them. So I may have lost a vote today, but as I walk out of this chamber, I feel fortunate to have served the American people. I leave the speakership with a sense of pride, accomplishment, and yes, optimism. From the day I entered politics, my mission has always been to make tomorrow better than today. I fought for what I believe in, and I believe in this country of America. My goals have not changed. My ability to fight is just in a different form. You need 218. Unfortunately, 4% of our conference can join all the Democrats and dictate who can be the Republican speaker in this House. I don't think that rule is good for the institution, but apparently I'm the only one. I believe I can continue to fight, maybe in a different manner. I will not run for speaker again. I'll have the conference pick somebody else. I hope you realize that every day I did the job, regardless whether you underestimated me or not, I wanted to do it with a smile. I grew to enjoy you, even on your toughest days and your questions. I could always tell what day it was based upon your question. Monday, you would ask if I could pass the bill. Tuesday was whether the rule would pass. Wednesday was the greatest challenge ever to my speakership. And Thursday, when we passed the bill, you didn't think it was a very big deal. And it all started again on Friday.
Republican Representative Patrick McHenry was appointed acting speaker for up to 3 legislative days. According to Reuters, until a House speaker is installed, it is unlikely that further action will be taken on any bills to fund the government, with lawmakers facing a November 17th deadline to provide more money or face a partial government shutdown. Republican lawmakers said they would need at least a week to choose a new speaker, which will eat into the time necessary to pass that needed legislation. Reuters reports the House's 221 Republicans and 212 Democrats huddled privately to figure out the next steps, both political and legislative. The leaders of both parties will have to decide when they are ready to enter into the process of electing a speaker. Fellow California Representative Ami Barra, a Democrat from the Sacramento area, told C-SPAN's Washington Journal that the base issue is a feud within the Republican Party itself. Representative Barra said he's surprised there's a delay before the vote for the next speaker.
I would have expected we'd be here today trying to vote to fill that speakership because, again, having no Speaker of the House is a dangerous precedent. The Speaker's third in line to the presidency should anything happen. And, again, the Speaker pro tem, my understanding is, can't fill that position. So that's a dangerous place for our country. That said, they've decided to have a recess until it sounds like Tuesday, where the Republicans will do a candidate forum for the various folks that may be running for speaker. We'll be back in session in caucus Tuesday night, I believe, and then hopefully we'll have a speaker vote on Wednesday.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced this week they are awarding some $23 million to support dairy businesses and producers under the Dairy Business Innovation Initiatives, or DBI, grant program. The initiative supports small and mid-sized dairy businesses in the development, production, marketing, and distribution of dairy products. USDA's Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, Jenny Lester Moffitt, said since 2019, the Dairy Business Innovation Initiatives have made significant impacts to the dairy industry and the ag economy as a whole through the funding of 441 projects. She said this additional funding will allow the initiatives to continue to provide the dairy industry and its businesses with tools and resources to ensure a steady supply of dairy products is available to consumers across the country. Now, this year's funds are being awarded non-competitively to the four current DBI initiatives. That includes the California State University in Fresno. The initiatives will use the funding to provide valuable technical assistance and sub-award funds to dairy farmers and businesses across the regions, supporting them with business plan development, marketing, and branding, as well as increasing access to innovative production and processing techniques to support the development of value-added products. Now, dairy farmers and businesses interested in the program must contact their initiative to be considered for direct technical assistance or a sub-award. If you'd like to learn more about this, you can go to the USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service website, ams.usda.gov. And if you didn't know, October is National Pork Month. But one thing the U.S. pork producers have asked the National Pork Producers Council to do is lead an effort to update the existing swine traceability system. So, NPPC is asking swine producers, veterinarians, cull swine and breeding operators, and show pig enthusiasts to comment on the draft standards, but you need to do so by October 27th. Back in 2006, U.S. swine producers voluntarily adopted animal traceability standards to strengthen the industry's ability to track animal movements with the goal of controlling the spread of animal diseases, particularly foreign animal diseases like African swine fever, foot and mouth disease, and classical swine fever. Now, the international markets would close immediately if a foreign animal disease were discovered here in the U.S., so strengthening live swine traceability and better assure animal health officials that they have access to comprehensive movement data and show training partners in the U.S. knows where disease-free animals are and that exported products are safe. Now, the updates on this will address some of the gaps like breeding stock, sows and boars, cull animals, and show pigs, premises registration for all producers, that includes cull and breeding operations, and also movement reporting for all pigs to centralized database that is available to animal health officials. NPP is seeking industry input before finalizing the updating standards, but again, you must do so by October 27th. To learn more, go to their website, nppc.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
If your soil could talk, what would it say? If it's healthy, it may already be saying some good things about your future. Because farmers who use soil health building systems that include no-till, cover crops, and diverse species and rotations report greater productivity, profitability, and resiliency to weather extremes. Learn more about what your soil is saying about its health and your future. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
There's a new crop insurance program for a different kind of agriculture. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. The USDA is announcing a new crop insurance program designed for agricultural producers using controlled environments in their operations. The new controlled environment program from the Risk Management Agency is specifically for plants grown in fully enclosed environments and provides coverage against plant diseases subject to destruction orders. Available beginning in the 2024 crop year, the program provides a risk management resource for urban, specialty crop and organic producers who often use controlled environments as a major part of their operations. RMA Administrator Marcia Bunger says they're always looking to expand and improve the crop insurance resources they offer to producers. She goes on to say controlled environment agriculture is a quickly growing sector in the nation's food production, and this new option is part of USDA's broader effort to support urban agriculture and new and better markets for American producers. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCullough. Many ag goods, including livestock, are sold at auction. In the context of an auction sale, when is an enforceable contract formed? A basic rule of contract formation is that there must be an offer and acceptance involving specific goods. At an auction sale, a bid constitutes an offer to buy, and a contract is formed when the auctioneer signals acceptance by the fall of the hammer or by some other customary act. If a bid is made while the hammer is falling in acceptance of a prior bid, the auctioneer has the discretion to reopen the bidding or declare the good sold. A bidder may retract the bid until the auctioneer's announcement of completion of the sale, but retraction does not revive any previous bid. Auctions may be held either with reserve or without reserve. In a with reserve auction, the seller or the auctioneer has the right to reject all bids if desired. In these auctions, a bid is an offer, and a contract is formed when the seller accepts the bid. In a without reserve auction, the goods must be sold to the highest bidder, even if only one bid is made. There are other auction rules that can also apply, especially if animals are being auctioned. It's good to know the rules of auctions, and always read the auction sale bill. If you don't, you might end up with something you don't want or need. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCullough.
More U.S. crops and commodities are covered in drought. The summary of the end of September U.S. Drought Monitor. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says that occurred throughout the previous month, despite cooler temperatures in several parts of the country.
We have seen a 4 percentage point increase in drought coverage across the lower 48 states. 38% covered by drought. That is up from 34% on August 29th. And that's a doubling of the U.S. drought coverage since we hit a 3-year low of 19% back on May 30th.
Flash drought in the eastern Corn Belt and worsening dryness in the lower Mississippi Valley are contributors to the latest drought coverage increase. Rippey adds,
we see an increasing array of states reporting the highest levels of drought, that extreme to exceptional drought,
with impacted areas including the Pacific Northwest and a stretch of southern tier states from Arizona to Alabama, as well as part of the western Corn Belt. How does this translate into drought coverage over crops and commodities? Rippey starts with a look at corn and soybeans for the period ending September 26th compared to mid-August.
58% of the U.S. corn acreage experiencing drought toward the end of September, up from a recent low of 42% about 6 weeks ago. Similarly, soybean acreage in drought, 55% of the country on September 26th, up from 38% 6 weeks ago.
For rice and cotton, both southern tier crops reported a 41% coverage by drought at September's end.
For cotton, that number was as low as 15% in drought in early July. And for rice, 0% of the national acreage was in drought back in May.
With winter wheat planting now underway in much of the nation,
47% of that crop acreage is now in drought as we head to the end of September. That's nearly steady over the last several weeks. We have pockets of concern in the Northwest, parts of the Great Plains, and more recently in the soft red winter wheat areas of the lower Midwest.
Finally, a look at hay and cattle producing areas in drought.
U.S. hay acreage in drought, 39% in drought. That is nearly double from what we saw back in May. U.S. cattle inventory in drought in late September, 46%. That is up from an annual low of 36% that occurred back in May.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
River barge rates going up, river basis levels going down. I'm Mark Oppold with your bottom line report brought to you by Kloss Equipment. Now's your chance to refuel your farm equipment for free thanks to Kloss. Register for your chance to win $10,000 worth of free farm diesel. Go to fuel.kloss.com, fuel.claas.com. Low water levels on the Mississippi south of St. Louis will back up grain as the harvest quickly moves along. St. Louis barge rates up nearly $15 a short ton in just 1 week. They're now above levels of a year ago. Further down the river in Memphis, corn basis levels down 70 cents the past 10 days. Soybean basis levels down over 45 cents over the same period. And the first frost of the season will hit the northern plains tomorrow night. Scotts Bluff, Nebraska, forecast low 30 degrees and lots of 32, 34 degree temperatures in the Dakotas. This is the bottom line report. The Dow below 33,000, S&P 500 below 4,200, the lowest since late spring. Meanwhile, the dollar index is the highest since Thanksgiving of last year. That's our bottom line. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
Farmland Partners, a commercial real estate company that owns and manages farmland in 20 states, released a report on its sustainability initiatives. But this environmental, social, and governance, or ESG, report is different than what you might see coming out of many publicly traded companies. Luca Fabbri, Farmland Partners president and CEO, explains.
Well, we are first and foremost an agriculture company. Then we are a real estate or a publicly traded company. So when we look at the rap that farmers get in the public domain and in environmental circles in particular, we get a little bit surprised. So working in agriculture, we know that this criticism is neither fair nor accurate. We know that U.S. farmers prioritize environmental stewardship. They are the original environmentalists, and they're doing amazing things by affordably feeding the world's growing population while minimizing their environmental impact. Our goal was to use our first ever ESG report to educate people about the great things farmers are doing every day and spotlighting our tenants' successes.
He talks more about the success of their tenants.
The report singled out a couple of our longtime tenants for being early adopters of cover crops, no-till, and other regenerative practices, but they are by no means outliers. We also discussed how advanced our tenants are across the entire portfolio. We conducted a tenant survey back in 2022 that showed some very promising numbers. So, for example, 97% of our tenants are actively investing in improving soil health. 94% practice some form of conservation tillage. 87% use variable rate application technology in their operations. And more than half participate in federal conservation programs.
Farmland Partners does business based on a unique philosophy.
We have a saying at our company: if we need to tell a farmer how to farm, then we probably need a new tenant. And we found that for the most part, farmers are already doing great things around in the sustainability. They are using the latest technologies and embracing the latest tools and techniques because doing so drives on-farm efficiencies, improves their bottom lines, and protects the land they depend on for their livelihood. Again, this simple fact is lost on too many people in the ESG discussion, which is why we wanted to really place our focus there in this report.
Fabbri talks about other important information in the ESG report.
The last couple of years have been very busy for us from an ESG standpoint. We expanded our renewable energy portfolio, and now we have wind and solar projects in operation or under construction that are capable of producing about 260 megawatts of electricity. We also teamed up with Ducks Unlimited to support conservation and habitat restoration projects. We crafted a series of sustainability policies for the company, and we calculated our company's direct greenhouse gas emissions for the first time, which were frankly very small given that we have a limited staff and a limited office footprint.
The Farmland Partners ESG report is available for review on its website, www.farmlandpartners.com. Chad Smith reporting.
Well, for about half the country, part of what you're going to hear in a second here will be a little late, but the rest of it will still apply. And if you've already brought your houseplants back indoors for the winter, this information from Kansas State University horticultural expert Ward Upham might still help the health of your plants. So let's assume you have not brought those plants inside just yet. Here's what you should have done. Ward Upham says hose those plants down with water.
What you're trying to do is get rid of any mites or any insects that happen to be on the top part of that plant. The second thing you should do is soak that pot in lukewarm water for about 15 minutes. That will force any insects that happen to be in that media to come out.
As to where to place those plants, he says you don't necessarily want to put them in their accustomed winter spots in the house just yet. Instead,
you want to put them in the area of the house where they get the most light. That's regardless of where they're going to end up.
And that's obviously because
those plants are used to high light levels outside. And you want them to go from high light levels to low light levels over a gradual period of time.
Several weeks, not days. Otherwise, you'll likely get a major dropping of leaves right off the bat. The plants will want to convert from sun leaves, which they've had all summer. These are smaller, thicker, more numerous leaves with less chlorophyll. But when the plants come inside,
they're going to want to try to convert those to shade leaves. Those are going to be larger, fewer, thinner, and more chlorophyll per leaf. If that change in light level is too quick, that plant is going to drop those old leaves and replace them with new. In other words, they're going to drop the sun leaves and replace them with shade leaves.
And it could happen fast, be very messy with leaves, and not good for the plant to have that sudden changeover.
So start them out in as bright a portion of the house as you can, then gradually move them to where they're going to spend the winter. And so that process can take 4 to 8 weeks, depending on how much difference there is in the brightest part of the house to where they're finally going to spend the winter.
Ward Upham says many people put those plants in places that are just too dark for their needs, considering that in winter the natural light available is only about 10% of what you get in the summer. And so you can expect it as a natural thing.
That plant is going to look a little peaked, and that's where people make a mistake.
Yes, they might imagine that their peaked plants are screaming at them. And water me. I need lots of water. I mean, look at me.
Well, that's the exact opposite of what you want to do. The problem is lack of light. It's not lack of moisture, not lack of fertilizer.
The tendency is to over-fertilize that plant.
So if you add too much fertilizer, you can burn roots, and that's detrimental to the plant. If you add too much water, you can suffocate the roots.
Upham says from now through February, use only maybe a fourth of the fertilizer you'd normally use on that plant, if that. Water the plant only if the soil feels dry when you poke your finger down about an inch into the soil. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water. Your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Today's specialty crop news brought to you by the Almond Board of California. You can find them online at almonds.com. We're joined again this morning by Almond Board Senior Specialist of Industry Communications, Taylor Hillman, this morning. And thanks for giving us some more time here.
Absolutely, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And we are talking about a new campaign that Almond Board has launched, looking at a specific market, and that's going to be Germany. So what is this campaign all about?
Yeah, Brian, we're excited about this one. It's something that we have touched on briefly before, but we have some more details on it as it launched in August. So the new campaign is called the Mother of All Snacks campaign. This campaign builds on insights that Germans are looking for a healthy and natural snack in a market where power bars and protein products and supplements are the mainstay. Almonds are often overlooked, seen primarily as a baking ingredient in the region. So the new campaign aims to change this perception, kind of capitalize on the fact that almonds are among the longest cultivated plants in the world, hence the mother of all snacks wording. And then from health benefits to portion size, they naturally have the attributes that are valued by German consumers.
And so kind of shifting a little bit of the focus there from just being that baking ingredient seems like a positive builder there. And just how important is this market for California almonds?
That's right. We see Germany as a very important market in the area of the European Union. This marketing campaign, again, launched back in August, and Germany is the largest economy in Europe, and it has an almond per capita consumption that's tied with the U.S. at 2.27 pounds. So this mother of all snacks campaign, again, is going to reposition almonds from a baking ingredient to a snack, hopefully providing a daily dose of natural goodness for health and wellness conscious Germans. There's strong momentum in the German market. It constitutes about 25% of Europe's gross domestic market, and it's home to 19% of the total European Union population. Almond shipments to the country totaled over 10 million pounds in 2017 and 2018. That's prior to the COVID pandemic. Germany shipment numbers have rebounded post-COVID and eclipsed the 14 million pound number this year alone. And I think it's important to note that another reason why we're looking at Germany is, again, as I mentioned, the shipping totals were high before COVID and they have rebounded recently. And while recent global developments like the pandemic, the war in the Ukraine, and these economic challenges, they've caused uncertainties across Europe. But the German market is known for its stability and as well as its resilience. And that's why we believe that this is a great opportunity for growth in almond consumption.
Wow. So definitely quite a sizable market with what sounds like some opportunity for growth there. And with this campaign, what does this look like? What's it constitute? What are some of the ads look like here?
Yeah, the campaigns are cool. They all look similar, as you can imagine from the title. This campaign is set in Mother Nature's paradise, and it shows how even Mother Nature's day can kind of go off the rails. There's a little bit of humor in it. But when it does go off the rails, she turns to the natural power of almonds to refocus, reset, and take back her day. The tone is very modern. It's bright, again, with a little bit of humor, and it highlights the natural, energizing attributes of almonds. The campaign is targeted towards women who believe food should be exciting, convenient, and healthy. German consumers also really care about the earth as well as sustainability. And the more they learn about how almonds are grown, the better they feel about eating them. This campaign launched again in August, technically August 21st, across TV, social, and digital media platforms. Also, we're utilizing the Bring mobile shopping app that will help connect almonds directly to users with digital shopping lists, just via their phones, which is kind of cool. The campaign will be accompanied by various public relations activities such as media outreach and partnerships, as well with a variety of social media influencers. So it's a full-fledged campaign. And like I said, it kicked off in August and the Almond Board is very excited about this one.
So it sounds like a pretty involved and large-scale kind of campaign there. And much like some of the other campaigns that the Almond Board has helped launch in other markets, I'm assuming that this is going to be touched on and explained a bit more in detail at the upcoming Almond Conference?
Yeah, that's right. We're going to, again, do what we did last year at the Almond Conference, where we're basically going to pack all of our global marketing demand updates into an opening session for everybody at the conference. So this year's global market demand session will be on Thursday, December 7th from 8 to 9 a.m. Again, we're going to pack this thing in. It's kind of fast paced. You learn the basics of all these campaigns. You get to see a lot of visuals. You get to see the ads. It's a great great one-stop shop to get up to date on all of the marketing activities that are going on around the world. Obviously, Deion Sanders and Coach Prime will have a big part of that session, but this will also be included in that session as well. So you can see the ads, you can learn more about the campaign, and just really see about how exciting some of these are. You know, oftentimes our industry doesn't get a chance to see how exciting some of these programs are in their areas. So for a chance to get it all in one place and to be able to see this information and see how exciting this marketing is, it's really cool.
Well, very good. Always nice to get a large scale update on some of the marketing efforts taking place. And just lastly here, where can people get more information or register for the Allman Conference this year?
That's right. Registration is open for the Allman Conference 2023. Anybody who wants to register can go online to allmans.com/conference and you can register today. Hotels went on sale a few weeks ago, and the ones that are close to the convention center right across the street, those are sold out. There may be a few individual nights available, but those are pretty much sold out. But we did get with a couple other hotels and open up some windows there as well, including the Embassy Suites and Fort Sutter Hotel there in Sacramento. So there's still some hotel blocks available. Register today. By registering early, you will get on an email list where we send updates and news coming out about the conference. So you will get a once every 2 or 3 week email about the conference. You'll get notified when the agenda is official and the descriptions are out, and you'll get updated when we have continuing education units approved for the conference. So just a great way to stay in the know leading up to your trip.
Well, very good. Looking forward to seeing everybody at Allman Conference this year. Once again, Allman Board Senior Specialist of Industry Communications, Taylor Hillman. Taylor, thanks again for taking the time this morning.
Absolutely. We'll see everybody in December.
Thanks, Brian. And stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
October 12th is National Farmers Day, a time dedicated to those who wake before the sun rises and often work until long after it sets. Thanks to farmers' tireless efforts, we have the food, feed, fiber, and fuel we need here in America and plenty more for export. Best of all, farmers produce all of this sustainably so that future generations can have the same bounty. Today and every day, please join Syngenta in honoring the men and women of American agriculture.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. The science program at Western Growers gets a new lead. Western Growers has made the announcement that they've hired Joelle Mosso to join the organization as Associate Vice President of Science Programs. Her responsibilities will be for risk assessment and developing practical and innovative food safety solutions for Western Grower members. Mosso was formerly the Senior Director of Technical and Regulatory Affairs for the Organic Trade Association. She led the association efforts on science-related issues and regulatory topics. Western Grower Senior Vice President of Science, Deanne Davis, says, quote, "We're delighted to welcome Joelle as the Associate VP of our science programs. Her extensive experience and unwavering passion as a scientist brings invaluable perspective to the science team, positioning both our members and the agriculture industry at large to continue their forward thinking on matters of food safety." Mosso's resume also includes serving as the Chief Scientific Officer for the Eurofins produce segment. She's also held food safety and business leadership roles at Eastbound Farm and Olam Spice and Vegetable Ingredients. For more on Western Growers Association and their science programs, you can visit www.wga.com.
Some lawmakers are expecting a battle over SNAP in the Farm Bill. Speaking at the recent 2023 Ag Outlook Forum, U.S. Congressman Tracy Mann, a Republican from Kansas, answered a question on if controversy over the SNAP program nutrition benefits can be expected in the Farm Bill debate.
There will be controversy. I mean, that is not, when you look at where agreement is or is not, there is still, I would say, disagreement on behalf of some members of Congress. I'm going to speak for everybody on what those levels are. So I think that continues to be part of the conversation. And when it's 81% of the funding, how would it not be? Right. So it's just when you talk about the Farm Bill, 81% now is on the food nutrition side. Whether those amounts are where they should be or not, that's for Congress to decide. But I definitely think those conversations will continue here moving forward.
Read more at agnetwest.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
USDA is investing in boosting sustainable productivity growth. Undersecretary of Agriculture Alexis Taylor says that USDA is investing heavily in projects to boost agricultural productivity. She was speaking at an event in Washington, D.C. to release a new report on productivity.
At USDA, we're investing in this in a big way, in such collaborative efforts, including Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities, which Secretary Vilsack launched last year. These partner-led pilot and demonstration projects are aimed at scaling up the deployment of climate-smart agriculture and forestry practices and increasing our understanding of how to efficiently monitor, measure, and track greenhouse gas benefits of those practices over time and at scale, all in a way that supports new markets for those climate-smart commodities. USDA is investing more than $3 billion for over 140 climate-smart projects covering more than 25 million acres in the United States.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at Agnet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the Agnet News Hour from Agnet West. Agnet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.